front of them, a Toyota. Hardly an optimal choice of car for any kind of thinking person, Uwe had pointed out to him many times while they stood there at the dealership. But at least it wasn't French. And Uwe managed to get the price reduced by almost 8,000 kroner and made sure that the kid got winter tires thrown in for the same price. So it seemed acceptable, in spite of it all. When Uwe got to the dealership, the bloody kid had been checking out a Hyundai, so it could have been worse. Once they made it back to their street, they go their separate ways. Uwe, Mirsad, and the cat wave at Parvana, Patrick, Jimmy, and the children turn off around the corner by Uwe's tool shed. It's difficult to judge how long the stocky man has been waiting outside Uwe's house, maybe all morning. He has the determined look of a straight-backed sentry posted somewhere in the field, in the wilderness, as if he's been cut from a thick tree trunk and the below-freezing temperature is of no concern to him. But when Mirsad comes walking around the corner and the stocky man catches sight of him, he quickly comes to life.
Our time is up for today. I hope you will join me next time when we continue with A Man Called Uwe by Frederick Bachmann. This has been Michael Guthrie for GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening.
That's all the time we have. Thank you for joining us for the Noon Book Hour. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow for our next installment from the Recording Library of West Texas.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 86 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. Then tomorrow mostly cloudy with a high in the low 80s. Tomorrow night it will be cloudy with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS program share and was recorded at the audio reading service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Prevention, and I'm your reader, Adrian Booker, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Prevention Magazine's 2021 issue. And now, I'll begin with an article in Prevention's Pulse section entitled Lemon Love. A fabulous flavor enhancer, lemon is good for your body too. Find out what makes this fruit so nutritious and how to get the most out of every squeeze. Citrusy superfood. Like all types of citrus, lemons are a good source of vitamin C. One lemon contains at least 25% of the daily recommended value. Lemons also contain B vitamins, crucial to cell production and function. Potassium, a mineral that acts as an electrolyte to help regulate fluid levels and muscle contractions. Calcium, a supporter of strong bones. Pectin, a type of fiber that promotes good digestion. And lots of different antioxidants, says Jessica Bippen, RDN, founder of At Nourished by Nutrition. How to get the benefits? Many of lemon's nutrients are found in the juice, so loosen it by rolling them before cutting into them, says Andrea Mathis, RDN, creator of BeautifulEatsAndThings.com. Hang on to the peel and the pulp. Lemon peel can be zested to add more flavor to a dish, and the pulp, where the fiber is, can add pop to a smoothie or be blended into dressing, hummus, or pesto, Mathis adds. To harness the vitamin C, avoid too much heat, says Bippen. Instead, squeeze lemon into dishes after cooking and find cold recipes to try. So many types. The classic lemons most commonly seen in supermarkets are usually Eureka or Lisbon lemons. Eurekas tend to be larger, while Lisbons look like Eurekas, but with slightly smoother and thinner skin. Another relatively common type is the Meyer lemon, smaller and rounder. These are thought to be a cross between a lemon and a mandarin, so their softer peel with an herbal scent varies in color from bright yellow to a rich yellowy orange. You can also track down seedless lemons and variegated pink lemons. The flesh is actually pink. and the rind can be yellow with green stripes or a blush pink color. Where to look? Lots of familiar brands sell lemon varieties. Sunkist produces all of the varieties listed above. Trader Joe's sells pink lemons. Aldi and Whole Foods offer Meyer lemons. And a wonderful company produces naturally seedless lemons. Or give yourself a treat and try Kraft Citrus Club by U.S. Citrus, which delivers curated boxes right to your doorstep. I'll now be reading another article from Prevention's Pulse section entitled Beauty Ingredient ID, Probiotics for Healthier Skin. Like your gut, your skin has a microbiome home to billions of beneficial bacteria known as probiotics. As probiotics work to reduce inflammation, skincare brands are getting in on the action. And their products may be helpful if you struggle with eczema, psoriasis, rosacea, or acne, says Rhonda Klein, MD, a board-certified dermatologist at Modern Dermatology in Westport, Connecticut. The efficacy of these products is still being studied, so they should be used to supplement, not replace, a gut-healthy diet. Look for probiotic-packed serums or lotions that are oil-free, fragrance-free, and non-comedogenic. And load up with foods like kefir and kimchi, which are rich in live active cultures, or pop a supplement that packs 30 billion CFU of lactobacillus and bifidobacterium strains to support your health, including that of your skin. DIY it. Make your own probiotic face mask by mixing honey and plain yogurt to your desired thickness, says Dr. Klein. The combo has live bacteria, antimicrobial properties, and lactic acid to gently exfoliate for a smoother, softer complexion. Prevention picks: Tula, 24/7 moisture hydrating and night cream, $52, Ulta.com. Biosance, squalane plus probiotic gel moisturizer, $52, Sephora.com. I'll now be reading another article from Prevention's Pulse section entitled, Know Your Stuff. How much do you really need? A solid skincare routine starts with the right products, but how you apply them makes a huge difference in your results, says Mona Gahara, MD, a board-certified dermatologist in Connecticut and an assistant clinical professor at Yale School of Medicine. You want to use enough to get the max benefit. Hydration, wrinkle reduction, or sun protection, but not so much that you get unwanted side effects, redness, peeling, or breakouts. Here's the ideal amount to use for each step. Number one, cleanser, the size of a cranberry or a dime. No need to go overboard with that pump. This amount should be enough to clean the surface area of your face, Dr. Gahara says. Number two, serum, the size of a pea. Because serums are highly concentrated with active ingredients like brightening vitamin C or exfoliating alpha hydroxy acids, they're meant to be used in a small amount that's easy to layer, says Dr. Gahara. Number three, moisturizer, the size of an almond. Using enough of your daily lotion or cream wards off dryness by hydrating the delicate skin barrier, but slathering on too much can lead to oily skin and clogged pores. Number four, retinol, the size of a pea. Like other active ingredients, retinol is powerful. You want to make sure you're getting enough to build collagen, Dr. Gahara says. This evens tone and reduces fine lines, but not so much that you're getting irritated. And number five, face sunscreen, the size of a grape or a nickel. This amount ensures that you'll get enough protection from the sun's harmful UV rays, which can cause premature aging and skin cancer. I'll now be reading an article in Prevention's Wellness section entitled Natural Fixes, Yoga for Arthritis by Caitlin Pyrie. Some who suffer from arthritis pain might assume that all types of exercise are off limits, But yoga can help you feel better physically and mentally. Certified yoga therapist Stephanie Munaz, PhD, a professor and director of research at Maryland University of Integrative Health and the founder and director of Yoga for Arthritis, explains why it works. How does yoga help with arthritis pain? Pain is probably the biggest reason people with arthritis come to yoga, and pain is incredibly complicated. Physically, strengthening the supporting muscles around a joint may increase stability, which may reduce irritation within it. Or there could be nerve pain associated with degeneration. Perhaps the spine is pressing on a nerve, leading to sciatica, and yoga may help alleviate it. Some yoga practices affect the nervous system too. For example, research shows that deep breathing shifts us out of our stress response, which people with chronic pain are often in, and into the relaxation response, and that can reduce pain. There are also pain pathways between the body and the part of the brain where we interpret sensation. Yoga may decrease pain by changing activity in those pathways. Are there mental health benefits as well? Yes. Arthritis includes more than 100 conditions that can affect just one joint or many. Some, such as systemic lupus, erythematosus, are autoimmune inflammatory diseases associated with depressive symptoms. Plus, living with chronic pain from arthritis can be incredibly frustrating, stressful, and depressing. Fortunately, several aspects of yoga, including the deep breathing mentioned above, can boost mental health. Another approach we use, progressive relaxation, can help calm muscles and our emotional state. So what's the best way to get started? First, ask your doctor if there are any poses or movements you should be careful about. Then, if you've never done yoga before, ideally you want an instructor with experience and training in working with arthritis to guide you one-on-one, in person or over Zoom. They can offer specific tips on adapting a yoga practice for your body, which is going to be different if you have, say, rheumatoid arthritis in your hands than if you have osteoarthritis in your knees. With these considerations, you can attend a class and let the instructor know about your condition. When choosing a class, look for descriptions like gentle, beginner, therapeutic, restorative, adaptive, accessible, and for seniors. How long will it take to feel better? There isn't a good research that says how much yoga you need to do, but I tell people yoga should be a lifestyle rather than an activity. Proper posture, deep breathing, and morning stretches are things you can do all the time, and they'll help more than if you do one class a week and nothing in between. It could take a month to see physical results, but you'll likely feel better mentally right away. I'll now be reading another article in Prevention's Wellness section entitled Beauty: When Stress Causes Hair Loss by Elisa Rustic. A year after the coronavirus first hit, doctors are discovering that dealing with it has unexpected side effects. One of them is hair loss, in particular, a form called telogen effluvium, a temporary period of shedding that happens after a stressful event. It's affecting people who had the virus, but also those who lost their jobs, cared for an ill family member, or were thrown into the world of homeschooling on top of working from home, says Yolanda Lindsay, MD, a board-certified dermatologist and the author of Getting to the Root. A bit of strand science. You shed up to 10% of your hairs, roughly 100 strands a day. That's totally normal. During telogen effluvium, however, that amount can shift up to as much as 30% and lead to daily loss of about 300 strands or more, says Dr. Lindsay. A major stressor can suddenly propel hairs in the growing phase, known as anagen, into the resting phase, telogen, causing them to be released from their follicles in large numbers. When you go through these stressful situations, the body is shifting its resources away from the hair to the vital organs, Dr. Lindsay explains. Finding the root cause. Stress-induced hair loss isn't unique to COVID-19. It can happen with any illness, particularly if you had a high fever or a severe infection or undergone an operation. It can also be spurred by significant weight loss over a short period of time, nutritional gaps, low protein intake or iron deficiency, anemia, for example, or hormonal imbalances such as hypothyroidism or stopping birth control. It can even happen following good stress, Dr. Lindsay says, most often after having a baby. Most of the time, people are able to pin down their triggers, but when telogen effluvium turns chronic, which occurs about 10% of the time, it may be harder to identify. It can become a vicious cycle. A major stressor spurs the hair loss, but the hair loss perpetuates the stress, so the shedding continues. After all, finding a clump of hair in the shower or in your brush can be a bit traumatic, particularly for women, as research shows that our hair is often tied to our self-esteem and how we present ourselves to the world. A lot of people are super distressed, as you can imagine, when they're losing hair, Dr. Lindsay says. Getting a diagnosis. Because there are so many forms of hair loss and shedding, including genetic thinning and autoimmune conditions such as alopecia areata, it's crucial to see a dermatologist specializing in hair loss. There's no single lab test for telogen effluvium beyond checking for deficiencies and hormone troubles, so they'll be able to perform a pull test. We take a section of hair and pull it from root to tip to see how many hairs come out, explains Dr. Lindsay, who doesn't recommend trying this yourself. If we get more than 3 to 6 hairs in a section, that's a positive pull test. These strands will come from the follicle and have white bulbs at the roots. Road to recovery. Thankfully, your hair will start to grow back on its own in 9 months after the stressful event, Dr. Lindsay says. There's no guarantee that you can speed up growth, but there are things you can do to support your hair and your body. Prioritize self-care. Overall, Dr. Lindsay recommends adopting habits to support your entire body. Find time to de-stress. Eat a rich diet in fruits and vegetables, stay hydrated, exercise regularly, and get enough sleep. Don't stop washing. You may be tempted to skimp the shampoo because you see more strands in the shower, but that's a mistake, Dr. Lindsay says. The hair has already been shed, and rubbing the roots just releases it. Plus, healthy hair starts with a healthy scalp. Go for gentler, sulfate-free formulas, but skip shampoos that claim to make your hair grow. This is a process your body is going through, and a $100 shampoo is not going to stop it, Dr. Lindsay says. Prevention pick? Neutrogena Healthy Scalp Micellar Water Shampoo, $12, Walmart.com. Skip the styling tools. While excessive styling doesn't cause shedding, it can cause hair to break mid-shaft, Dr. Lindsay says. Avoid using heat, chemical treatments, and dyes. Instead, give your locks some love with a deep conditioning treatment as needed for a boost of nourishment. Prevention pick? Olaplex, No. 3 Hair Perfector, $28, Sephora.com. Try a supplement. A supplement isn't a quick fix, but Dr. Lindsay says there are formulas designed to support hair health. She's seen good results in her own patients who have lost a lot of hair and want to thicken things up as fast as possible. Prevention pick? Nutrafol Women, $79 per month, Nutrafol.com. I'll now be reading an article from Prevention's Family section entitled 4 Keys to Co-Parenting by Holly Pesner. There's a lot of worry that comes with parenting after a divorce. But here's the truth. Divorce doesn't damage children, but it involves enormous change and loss, says Karen Bonnell, a co-parenting coach and author of The Co-Parenting Handbook. unskilled parenting during and after a divorce, like putting kids in the middle of conflict, damages children. So go ahead and take a deep breath. The kids will be okay. To get to okay faster, follow these simple co-parenting rules. Number one, emphasize the co in co-parenting. When kids hear a parent continue to refer to their ex as an important member of their parent team, that means a lot, says Bonnell. When your children know that you two communicate about them, it really helps them feel like they have one childhood across two homes, she adds. Say your kiddo asks about joining a travel baseball team. You might respond, "That sounds exciting. I'll bring it up with your daddy next time we speak and let you know what we think." Number two, get a business sense. Creating a successful childhood is not unlike running a successful business, says Bonnell. Instead of working together to sell something, you're working together to produce a happy and healthy kid. As co-CEOs and CFOs of your child, you and your co-parent need to hammer out logistics on how to get there, which means figuring out things like finances, schedules, and future plans. Within that context, there's no room for so-called fireable behavior like personal attacks. Think of it like this. Would you criticize your business partner's taste in girlfriends during a company roundtable? A skillful business relationship will stand the test of time, and it's imperative if and when new adults and children come into the mix, says Bonnell. Number three, respect the other house rules. Say you have a make your bed before school rule, but your ex doesn't. Eventually you'll hear, "But why? I don't have to do it at Dad's." Instead of criticizing the co-parent's rules, answer honestly and without judgment, says Jan Blackstone, PSYD, co-author of Co-Parenting Through Separation and Divorce, who suggests something like this. You have two homes, and we like things done a certain way. Neither is better. It's just what we like. Out of respect for us, please follow the rules. This way, you don't indicate whose rule is better or undermine your co-parent. If you think it is as mom's versus dad's house, then your child is a visitor to both and has no real home, says Blackstone. Number four, set boundaries with friends. Having friends trash talk your ex may feel good, but divorced parents who think their friends disapprove of their exes actually have more co-parenting conflicts, a report in the Journal of Child and Family Studies says. Negative reinforcement encourages folks to hold on to anger, which escalates clashes. Next time you need a shoulder, ask your friends to just listen, says Leela Magavi, MD, a psychiatrist with Community Psychiatry based in Newport Beach, California, and consider a therapist to help you process your emotions. I'll now be reading another article in Prevention's family section entitled "All About Ears" by Liz Schumer. Whether your dog's ears hang low or stand at attention, they need more than just the occasional scratch. All dogs can get ear infections, which not only are painful, but also can affect their hearing and sense of balance. Here's how to keep ear problems at bay. Number one, who gets ear infections? Dogs whose ears are long and floppy, or especially hairy, may be predisposed to getting more ear infections because of decreased air circulation, explains Jerry Klein, DVM, Chief Veterinary Officer of the American Kennel Club. That said, any type of ear can get infected. Pets who do a lot of swimming or bathing or have a history of ear trouble or allergies may get them more often, says veterinarian and pet safety advocate Jason Nicholas, BVET Med. Food allergies in particular can contribute to ear issues and are likely to affect both ears at once. Number two, signs of trouble. A dog who has the most common type of ear infections, otitis externa, may be in pain and may shake their head excessively and scratch at their ears, head, or neck. Their ears may have a foul odor, yellow, brown, or crusty, discharged, or thickened, inflamed skin. A middle ear infection may also lead to a head tilt, circling, or loss of balance. If you notice any of these signs, head to your veterinarian for evaluation. The vet will check your dog's ears and swab for debris to evaluate under a microscope called ear cytology. Then treat them with appropriate medication. Number 3, how often to check? Look in your dog's ears once a week if you can, and not just with a cursory glance. By really examining and comparing each ear canal to the other, you can detect unusual changes, says Klein. Look to see whether the ear canals are the same color and be alert for musty or foul odors or any discharge or skin texture aberrations. For dogs with floppy ears, gently lift or pull back the ear flaps to evaluate the ear canals. Always look in your pet's ears a few days after bathing or swimming to make sure an infection isn't brewing. Because bacteria and yeast grow best in damp environments, keep your dog's ears clean and dry. There are lots of ear cleaners for dogs. Your vet can guide you on the best choice. Never stick a cotton swab into your pet's ear canal, or yours for that matter, as it could become lodged there or cause damage, warns Nicholas. What about cats? Cats can get ear infections too, and both dogs and cats can get ear mites. The tiny bugs may look like white specks on dark fur and can cause irritation, waxy discharge, and hair loss from scratching. They're highly contagious even between species, so head to the vet for treatment as soon as you notice any of these signs. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Adrian Booker with Prevention. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, wormer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
Sunday afternoons, we take you around the Lone Star State for 3 hours, starting at 2 p.m. with Texas Monthly Archives. At 3, it's the current issue of Texas Monthly Magazine. At 4, Travelin' Texas. And at 4:30, Texas Gardener. Sunday afternoons, beginning at 2, on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Excessive parathyroid hormone. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 88-year-old man in quite good health. I spend at least 30 hours a week doing yard work. I have had high blood calcium for many years, usually around 10.7. I take provostatin and triamterene HCTZ. My doctor has been a little concerned and has been monitoring it. She sent me to an endocrinologist who did the same. Neither suggested treating it in any way. I have read on the internet that high blood calcium is more dangerous than high cholesterol. I'm not in favor of surgery unless absolutely necessary, even more so now in these times of the coronavirus. Right now, she is getting me in to see a specialist. W. Answer. It is very likely that you have a condition called primary hyperparathyroidism. This is caused by an excess of parathyroid hormone. I suspect one of your doctors has already confirmed this with a blood test. The parathyroid glands, there are usually four, are located, as their name suggests, immediately adjacent to the thyroid glands in the neck. But parathyroid hormone is very distinct from thyroid hormone. Parathyroid hormone is a major regulator of calcium levels in the blood, along with vitamin D.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 89 and clear. Tonight it will be cloudy with a low in the mid-70s. Then tomorrow partly cloudy with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night it will be cloudy with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Due to unforeseen circumstances, our regularly scheduled program will not be heard at this time. We hope you enjoy this special presentation on GARS.
Hi, thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Natural Health. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. For today's program, I have selected a couple of articles from the March 24th to 30th, 2021 issue of the Mind and Body section of the weekly newspaper called the Epoch Times. The cover article is entitled, When Trauma Gets Trapped in the Body, How We Can Overcome the Shame, Face the Pain of Life's Unexpected Jolts of Agony. And the second article is, Our Hormones Have Been Hijacked. Human fertility rates are plummeting amid a tidal wave of endocrine-disrupting chemicals. So I'm going to get started right away with the first article by Conan Milner called, When Trauma Gets Trapped in the Body, How We Can Overcome the Shame, Face the Pain of Life's Unexpected Jolts of Agony. Imagine if the sound of footsteps made you fear for your life. It's a feeling that author Karen Stefano suffered with for more than 30 years. When I go out on my runs, I'm very conscious of anybody running behind me and the sound of feet slapping concrete, Stefano said. Sometimes I want to pat myself on the back about how I cope, but then I go through episodes where I think, I haven't grown at all. I haven't gotten over this. Not all footsteps trigger a panic attack, but Stefano never knows when her fear will strike. She recalls one episode a few years ago when she was walking down the street on a sunny San Diego morning. It was a safe area. Plenty of people were milling around. But when Stefano heard the sound of a man jogging behind her, she became overcome with dread. I spun around and almost screamed at the poor guy. He was just mortified and apologized profusely, even though he had done absolutely nothing wrong. Stefano explores the source of her fear in her book, What a Body Remembers, a memoir of sexual assault and its aftermath. In the summer of 1984, Stefano was a 19-year-old sophomore at UC Berkeley. One night, as she was walking to her off-campus apartment, she heard the footsteps of a man who would cast a long shadow on her life. As she made her way to her apartment, just before midnight, Stefano saw the man on the street. At first she dismissed his presence, probably just a grad student. But once she heard his footsteps change course and follow her into her building, she felt a twinge of concern. A few moments later, the man's wild blue eyes met hers and his motives became clear. My body knew his intentions, she said. The man cornered Stefano in a tunnel-like concrete hall that led to her apartment. He revealed a knife and grabbed her 110-pound body tightly from behind. He held the knife to her throat with one hand and covered her mouth with the other. She was stunned at first, but then she began to scream. Her attacker struggled to silence her, but her screams only grew more ferocious. As the sound of neighbors opening their doors crept into the hallway, the attacker released her. She fell to the ground as his footsteps trailed off into the night, heading Mark of Shame. Stefano sustained little physical harm, just a puffy bruise on her lips where her assailant gripped her mouth. But even today, the aftermath still lingers like a scar that refuses to heal. She says the worst part is the shame that accompanies it. Back in 1984, PTSD was not a well-known term. It was just coming into the lexicon. I certainly didn't know there was a name for what I was going through. I didn't cope. I just denied what I was experiencing with the mantra, "I'm fine," Stefano said. Part of what generates shame for a victim following trauma is a loss of control. First, you find yourself at the mercy of high-stress circumstances. Then, your panic gauge seems to be broken. Days, weeks, or even years later, when its objectivity clear and there's no danger in sight, your body may still react as if another threat is just around the corner. You try to convince yourself that everything is fine, but your body is still stuck on high alert. There's a societal pressure to project an image of having it all together, Stefano said, but you don't just get over it as much as you would like to. Why does fear maintain its hold on us long after the traumatic event has passed? According to Erica Hornthal, a licensed clinical counselor and board-certified movement therapist specializing in PTSD, your body isn't working against you, it's just trying to protect you. At the heart of it is safety, Hornthal said. This is a survival mechanism that we've had since the beginning of time. It's that very primal part of us that we forget is there sometimes, but that's the part that's really trying to keep us safe. Hornthal describes a panic attack as a kind of flashback, plunging you into the past to relive the feelings of a traumatic event, even when your environment poses no actual threat. She explains that memories aren't formed in the same way in trauma as they are when we're not under stress. So when we confront a trigger that resembles the traumatic event, like footsteps, for example, those same fight-or-flight feelings can come flooding back. The body doesn't know everything is okay. It's just responding to the stimulus, Hornthal says. Heading: Giving Voice to the Pain. Hornthal says that when trauma victims are faced with losing so much control, they often blame themselves as a way to regain some control. However, this only amplifies the shame. We can internalize it and make ourselves feel like we brought it on. We will rationalize that it was our fault. If only I would have done this or hadn't done that, Hornthal said. According to Stefano, we can only counteract this shame by finding a voice for those feelings. By talking about it, you take away the shame, she said. Secrets don't help you heal. It's only by shedding some light on our issues that we can make them go away. We can make them even more manageable than we can help other people. But being able to process and talk about these feelings can take a lifetime, especially if you don't have the skills or the support necessary when the trauma first strikes. Stefano says her panic came and went over the course of her life on its own mysterious time frame. It slowly faded a few years following the incident, and it seemed to disappear completely during the years she worked as a criminal defense attorney. During that time, she represented many violent individuals, some of whom committed sexual assaults similar to the one she suffered. But Stefano says she didn't feel any panic, only compassion. It's a paradox, but I came to develop compassion for these very flawed human beings, she said. I was honest to God, the only person on earth fighting for them. Many of them didn't have a family. They didn't have money. They didn't have any prospects. They were severely psychologically damaged, and the prosecution was out to string them up. Stefano's panic returned with a vengeance about 5 years ago when she was enduring several new traumas, financial problems, a devastating divorce, and her mother's dementia. During this time, the old memories and panic attacks related to the assault of her college days came flooding back. The difference was that now she had acquired wisdom, perspective, and knowledge she lacked when she was 19. That's when I started to actually do some beneficial coping mechanisms, like going to therapy, she said. Hornthal sees a similar pattern in her patients. She says even those who think they've processed their experience and have successfully moved on are often forced to confront these feelings again. They'll say, I thought I processed this. Why is it coming back? It's because a part of your brain is still storing it, Hornthal said. As we've seen in the recent Me Too movement, people are coming out 15 or 20 years later to tell their stories, and it's often because they're just not able to speak about it until then. Heading, listening to the pain. In addition to talking with a therapist, Stefano has also found relief through running and EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, a proven trauma recovery method that involves lateral eye movements. We typically think of talking as the primary mode of processing an experience, but movement may be a significant part of the puzzle. Experts say that the body also needs a way to voice its own story in order for us to truly move on. As a movement therapist, Hornthal believes addressing the physical body is essential for trauma recovery. She says movement is what allows the stuck feelings to resurface so that we can vocalize them. That's what it takes to release those trapped emotions and for us to really rewire, reintegrate, and change the brain, Hornthal said. Movement is the first language that we learn. As we get older, typically our higher brains take over and we can start to rationalize why we feel a certain way. We don't necessarily listen to our body like we used to. In addition to moving our body in ways to release the trauma, we also need to be open to what our body has to say once the feelings come bubbling to the surface. Most of us tend to ignore the signals our body gives us, but it's especially difficult when it's trauma-related, because the messages our body has to deliver in these cases can be very painful. It's about identifying those feelings, and when you're working with trauma and people who have experienced incredible pain, a lot of it is painful, Hornthal said. It feels counterproductive to feeling better. Why would I want to sit in my misery? I just want to feel good. It's certainly not fun, but it's necessary, because unless we take the time to sit in our discomfort and acknowledge the pain we feel, it will continue to haunt us. Stefano sees the same dynamic playing out in her own recent trauma, her mother's death. She died just a few months ago, and Stefano says she's watching herself do the same dance of denial she did when she was 19. She says she knows better now with everything she's learned, but still finds herself avoiding the pain. I believe our minds will do anything to avoid pain and processing pain, Stefano said. But if your mind keeps pushing it down because you don't want to feel the pain, your body is going to make you address this one way or another. It says we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. You are listening to Natural Health on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader, and the second article I've selected for today is entitled, Our Hormones Have Been Hijacked. Human fertility rates are plummeting amid a tidal wave of endocrine-disrupting chemicals, by Joseph Mercola. Plastic is such a ubiquitous part of modern life that it's hard to imagine a world without it. But in the grand scheme of things, plastics are still a new invention. As noted by Pete Myers, the chair, founder, and chief scientist of Environmental Health Sciences, there's a lot we don't know about plastics and health, but then there's a lot that we do, particularly when it comes to the chemicals in plastics. Much is known about the risks they pose to human health, including to future generations through intergenerational endocrine disruption. It's enough to give me great pause, says Myers. Endocrine disruptors, which are widespread in plastic products and similar in structure to natural sex hormones such as estrogen, interfere with normal hormone function and more. According to Myers and other researchers, these chemicals jeopardize the reproductive health and continuation of the entire human race. Your hormones have been hijacked. Your body's astonishing, finely calibrated signal system, a system that controls everything from your weight to your fertility to your mood, has been scrambled by loosely regulated chemicals manufacturers use in a myriad of ways, including in consumer products, says Myers. These hijackers, known to scientists as endocrine-disrupting chemicals, are threatening our existence as a species. Driving this problem are chemical companies focused only on cheap plastics and regulators unwilling to do anything about it. Heading, male fertility declining could reach zero by 2045. Myers highlights the book Countdown, written by Shanna Swan, a reproductive epidemiologist at Mount Sinai's Icahn School of Medicine. It's based on a 2017 study she co-wrote, which found sperm counts dropped by 59.3% from 1973 to 2011. The most significant declines were found in samples from men in North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, where many had sperm concentrations below 40 million per ml, which is considered the cutoff point at which a man will have trouble fertilizing an egg. Overall, men in these countries had a 52.4% decline in sperm concentration and a 59.3% decline in total sperm count. Sperm concentration multiplied by the total volume of an ejaculate. The book expands on what Swan describes as an impending fertility crisis. Along with the dropping sperm counts, changes in sexual development pose a threat to human survival. The current state of reproductive affairs can't continue much longer without threatening human survival, Swan warns. In fact, she estimates that if current projections continue, sperm counts could reach zero in 2045. Global fertility rates are also falling, reaching 2.4 births per woman in 2018, down from 5.06 in 1964. Fertility rates in about 50% of countries worldwide are at 2.1, which is below population replacement level. This cataclysmic drop in fertility rates makes human beings an endangered species, according to Swan and the generally accepted criteria for defining an endangered species. Within a generation, we could see a staggering decline in human reproduction. While there are numerous factors involved, including contraception and costs of raising children, biological reasons such as declining sperm counts, increasing miscarriage rates, and genital abnormalities are also driving down birth and fertility rates. Endocrine-disrupting everywhere chemicals are a key culprit, she writes. Chemicals in our environment and unhealthy lifestyle practices in our modern world are disrupting our hormonal balance, causing various degrees of reproductive havoc. Heading, has the countdown to infertility begun? Countdown brings some little-known findings into the spotlight, like the fact that a significant part of the global population may not be able to reproduce without technological assistance come 2050. Men today have about half the number of sperm compared to their grandfathers. There appears to be a synergy occurring as well, which the book dubs the 1% effect. Sperm count, testosterone, and fertility are all dropping at about 1% a year, while testicular cancer and miscarriage are rising at about the same rate. Studies continue to link endocrine-disrupting chemical, EDC, exposure to reproductive health problems. One review of 35 studies looked at one common EDC, bisphenol A. According to our findings, BPA has a direct negative impact on maternal, fetal, and neonatal outcomes, including birth weight, rates of preterm birth, developmental defects, and recurrent miscarriage, wrote researchers in their 2017 review published in the Journal of Maternal, Fetal, and Neonatal Medicine. Another EDC used for making plastics more flexible is known as di-2-ethylhexyl phthalate, that's what we know as DEHP, a phthalate plasticizer. Clinical and experimental studies have indicated that exposure to DEHP is associated with developmental abnormalities of the reproductive system, particularly of male neonates, endometriosis and miscarriage in women, low sperm counts and lower sperm motility, and DNA integrity in men, and placental problems with higher rates of low birth weight, premature birth, and fetal loss in laboratory animals, researchers warned in a 2016 study published in the Journal of Applied Toxicology. Chemical exposure during pregnancy has been found to affect both masculinization and long-term fertility in males. In the wild, fish, frogs, and reptiles are also increasingly being born with both ovaries and testes. Heading: Environmental Chemicals Causing Fertility Declines. A number of chemicals are wreaking havoc with human fertility. EDCs interfere with endogenous hormones, and it's been found that some effects on exposure persist in future generations, even among males that weren't directly exposed. Research published in PLOS Genetics, for instance, found that exposing male mice to ethanol estradiol, a synthetic sex hormone found in birth control pills, causes developmental problems in the reproductive tract, thereby lowering sperm counts. Men may be exposed to birth control pills through contaminated water and other sources. This study also revealed the generational effects of EDCs. Environmental Health News reported, quote, "They observed adverse effects starting in the first generation of mouse lineages, where each generation was exposed for a brief period shortly after birth. The impacts worsened in the second generation compared to the first, and by the third generation, the scientists were finding animals that could not produce sperm at all. This latter condition was not seen in the first two generations exposed. Details of the experimental results actually suggested that multiple generations of exposure may have increased male sensitivity to the chemical," end quote. Other research adds further evidence that environmental chemicals are involved in fertility declines. A study published in Scientific Reports in 2016 found that dogs living in human households suffered similar declines in sperm quality to humans, with sperm motility declining by 30% over a 26-year period. In the canine study, the researchers linked certain environmental chemicals to sperm problems and suggested they could also be responsible for the sperm quality declines in humans, a notion supported by a 2019 follow-up study also published in Scientific Reports. Researchers from the University of Nottingham used sperm samples from 11 men and 9 dogs from the same UK region. They exposed the sperm to doses of two types of environmental chemicals, DEHP and polychlorinated biphenyl 153, PCB-153, currently found in the environment. The result was reduced sperm motility and increased DNA fragmentation. The researchers believe dogs may act as a sentinel for declines in male fertility and that man-made chemicals used widely in home and work environments are the likely culprits. The previous 2016 study even detected such chemicals in dog sperm and some dog food. Heading: Top Sources of Endocrine Disruptors. The Environmental Working Group, EWG, named the following 12 chemicals in their Dirty Dozen list of EDCs: bisphenol A, BPA, dioxin, atrazine, phthalates, perchlorate, fire retardants, lead, mercury, arsenic, perfluorinated chemicals, PFCs, organophosphate pesticides, and glycol ethers. Such chemicals are ubiquitous, being found in everything from food, drinking water, and household goods to personal care products, cleaning products, nonstick cookware, and foodware plastics. Others, like atrazine, are banned in the European Union, but still widely used in the United States. Early research by Tyrone Hayes, an integrative biologist at the University of California, Berkeley, hypothesized that atrazine turned on an enzyme, aromatase, that caused testosterone to be converted into estrogen. If you're a male, This means that you won't make sperm, but you will make estrogen, even though you shouldn't. According to Hayes and colleagues in research published in Nature in 2002, exposure to waterborne atrazine contamination led to gonadal abnormalities such as retarded development and hermaphroditism in 10% to 92% of male wild leopard frogs. Hayes published another study in 2010 in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, PNAS, which had similar findings. Phthalates, another class of chemicals on the list, are linked to hormone changes and appear to trigger death-inducing signaling in testicular cells, making them die earlier than they should, EWG noted. These chemicals have also come under fire for impairing brain development and putting children at higher risk of learning, attention, and behavioral disorders. Heading, avoiding EDCs. Plastic is indeed ubiquitous. A team of 20 researchers published a study in Science in September 2020 warning, plastic pollution is a planetary threat affecting nearly every marine and freshwater ecosystem globally. They warned that by 2030, we could be dumping 53 million metric tons of plastic into our planet every year. These mountains of plastic breaking down in our soil, waterways, and oceans make it all but impossible to avoid contamination. That said, there are many things you can do to significantly reduce your exposure. Bullet: avoid plastic containers and plastic wrap for food. Store food and drinks in glass containers instead. Bullet: avoid plastic children's toys. Use toys made of natural substances such as wood and organic materials. Bullet: read labels on your cosmetics and avoid those containing phthalates. Bullet: avoid products labeled with fragrance, including air fresheners, as this catch-all term may include phthalates commonly used to stabilize the scent and extend the life of the product. Bullet: look for PVC-free products, including children's lunchboxes, backpacks, and storage containers. Bullet: do not microwave food in plastic containers or covered in plastic wrap. Bullet: frequently vacuum and dust rooms with vinyl blinds, wallpaper, flooring, and furniture that may contain phthalates, as the chemical collects in dust and is easily ingested by children. Bullet: eat mostly fresh, raw, whole foods and avoid the food packaging that is often a source of phthalates. Bullet: use glass baby bottles instead of plastic. Breastfeed exclusively for the first year, if you can, to avoid plastic nipples and bottles altogether. And I hate to do this, but I'm going to have to continue the list in next week's broadcast, because now it's time for the answer to last week's, actually 2 weeks ago, trivia question, which was, where were the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights stored during World War II? The answer: Fort Knox. And today's trivia question is, which country consumes the most chocolate per capita? And that is all the time we have for today's edition of Natural Health. Remember, if you missed any part of this program, you can access it on demand at sunsounds.org. Click Broadcast Info and Audio, then On Demand Podcasts, then select Natural Health under the Health category. And while you're there, explore some other topics that you may also be interested in. Thanks again for tuning in. I am Ann Mihalik, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Be sure to stay tuned for more great programming. Bye for now.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Midland College is offering a Spain for the Spanish Vistas Tour. The trip will take place June 13th through 22nd, 2022, and includes visits to Madrid, Granada, Seville, and Barcelona. price is approximately $5,000 per traveler, which covers airfare, baggage, fees, hotels, daily breakfast and dinner, a 24-hour tour manager, all in-country transportation, and entrance fees to attractions such as museums and other cultural experiences. There are a number of different payment plans, and travelers who book now can take advantage of an early bird discount. For more information, contact MC English Professor Allison Gibbons Brown at 432-685-4648.
Starting Wednesday on the Noon Book Hour, The Street Lawyer by John Grisham. Michael Brock is billing the hours, making the money, rushing relentlessly to the top of Drake & Sweeney, a giant D.C. law firm. One step away from partnership,